one into the night. Deep into right. Way out of here.
Swung on.
Bit crushed.
And the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
From WHYY, welcome to your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. I'm Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus, and I'm the author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were doing while Joe DiMaggio was making history, available now. With me is Liz Rocher, the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Hello, Liz.
Hello. Summer of the Cheap Wieners, a book my father's recently finished and called wonderful and very funny.
And if anybody's looking for and thank him, please. That's very kind of him to say that. And if you're looking for a summer beach read for the dad in your life, you know, Father's Day is
perfect.
Next month. Something to start thinking about. Or if you are just a person who enjoys baseball and a fun story, don't have to be a dad. We can broaden our market for this. It's got mass appeal, I swear. It's a niche topic with
dad,
mass appeal.
So I'm a dad and I loved it.
This concludes the marketing section of today's episode. But on Thursday night, for anybody who was hoping the Phillies had cast themselves into the flames so that the Flyers could thrive in their playoff series against the Carolina Hurricanes, since everyone knows only one Philly team can win at a time, well, we were reminded that sports are stupid and shouldn't be watched by anyone. Well, it certainly seems, Liz, that our Phils have entered a pattern. Interim manager Don Mattingly took over, and that's had whatever impact it has had, and now they seem to win four games and then lose one humiliatingly. That seems to be how this team goes now. They swept the Giants and beat the Marlins, then got one hit by Max Mayer after starting a remarkable outfield of Garrett Stubbs, Adolis Garcia, and Felix Reyes. Then they took the last two.
That's not an outfield.
It's
definitely, we know this, that's not an outfield. That's a couple of guys who got lost.
That's an infield and like a guy playing shallow.
That is a child's little league game.
Well, shockingly, they lost that game, I think we all recall. Then they took the last two from the Marlins and the first two from the A's in the series they wrapped up this week before last night when Andrew Painter started the game with a different kind of pattern all his own. Walk, home run, walk, home run. After going through that twice with the first couple batters of the game, Painter put the Phillies in a 4-0 hole in which they drowned immediately. We'll break down the game action in a minute here, but the ultimate box score read A's 12, Phillies 1. On another night, the Phillies will be looking to flush and forget. Liz, does a real out-and-out butt-kicking like that damage the Phillies' recent run of success? How fragile are you viewing this kind of mini turnaround here since sweeping the Giants?
I think it's fine. I think even the team knows they, you know, sometimes they get a butt kicking. That's the way it goes. And, you know, I don't think it'll ruin anything. You know, everything seems to be working well right now. Everyone seems to be happy. Everyone seems to be getting along. The way I'm saying it makes it seem like it's fragile, but I don't think it is. I think they can handle some of this, you know? And honestly, I feel like I would rather the humiliation be doled out in one big game like every week rather than like a little bit every game, making every game a little bit worse. I'd rather just all the humiliation be wrapped up once every week or week and a half in one really crappy game, and then we can all move on.
Did you feel like it was unfair? It kind of went against the deal that was made that the Phillies would lose in such resounding fashion, and then the Flyers would do so as well. I mean, this is a very stressful time in Philadelphia. There's two teams in the playoffs, one of whom has, I think, higher expectations than the other, or is certainly looked at differently. But for the most part, it feels like even when one of them does win, it's never really the right one. Like, you know, I guess
yeah.
The Sixers did eliminate the Celtics when it was their turn to win. But ultimately, it's just it's an unfair cycle. But to your point, Liz, things are starting to work here. And the truth is about the Phillies, not everything needs to work. The starting pitching needs to work. And then everything else tends to fall into place because that's how this team is built. And that's what you're starting to see happen here with a couple of these starters really, really bouncing back from inconsistent stretches. Game one of this A's series was all Christopher Sanchez, who gave you the most comforting start of the season thus far, I would say. Just given the context of his struggles to start early this year, this sort of like indefinable, yeah, you know, just kind of working stuff out, got hit hard today, you know, command wasn't there, you know, that kind of stuff. You're just like, well, you got to hope it's more of an isolated incident. And Sanchez, with his start against the A's in game one of this series, kind of showed you. Yeah, no. Christopher Sanchez is very much still in there, very much he's ready still, to be a part of this rotation in a big way. Jesus Luzardo had just become the first Phillies pitcher of 2026 to throw seven innings. And Sanchez said, well, I can beat that. And when he came off the mound, having pitched through a jam in the seventh, he was hyped, yelling, flexing, slapping his glove. Todd Zielecki notes that Phillies starters have a 1.53 ERA in the last eight games, striking out 57 and walking 10 in 47 innings. Sanchez is tied with teammate Jesus Luzardo for third in the National League with 1.2 wins above replacement, says Fangraphs. So, Liz, I mean, you know, this aspect of game one alone had to tell you these Phillies are... they've turned some kind of corner, at least, because this is a change from a situation that was just not consistent before and is starting to look like the starters they've relied on have been able to pitch the way they're supposed to pitch.
I mean, Luzardo and Sanchez especially look like they're so back. They are back from ever. They probably weren't even gone. They were just on vacation briefly. They both look like they used to. Someone said this looks like vintage Sanchez. And I'm like, vintage as in last year? That is still current Sanchez.
Hasn't been that long.
That's now Sanchez. The Sanchez that we last saw being amazing was less than a year ago. That's the same guy.
Vintage Sanchez would be that quad A guy hanging around training camp who hadn't really made a name for himself
yet. He has one of those starts. That is vintage Sanchez. That is bad. We want new Sanchez. All good. And it's great to, I mean, watching Christopher Sanchez get out of that jam. He looked, I mean, I love seeing a guy get excited off the mound. You know, because it's a much different thing than hitting a home run, which is like you have this long, you know, trot to sort of get all of your energy out. Then you hit all of your teammates. When you pitch, it's just you there. It's just you. And then you walk off the mound and it's just you celebrating. And it's always so cool to see guys get so confident and so amped up that's what they do. It's fun to see that. We haven't seen a lot of pitchers do that for the Phillies this year. And it's great to see them getting into that groove where they feel really confident. They're like, I can get out of this. This is me.
It's not weird to see Sanchez have a moment like that, but when he does, it's always very earned. He's never playing to the audience or hamming it up out there. It's all very raw, real emotion coming out of big moments and coming up big. So that is excellent to see. He gave the Phillies 97 pitches through eight innings of three-hit shutout ball. Having said that, I almost kind of get the phrase vintage Sanchez there.
I know.
Thankfully, the offense used that performance to score more than a couple of runs. Bryce Harper stayed hot with three hits, including two bombs. Brandon Marsh stayed hot with three hits and scored a run. Bryson Stott stayed hot with one of the Phillies' four doubles of the day. Joan Duran made his return, which was not as hot. You were just kind of happy the Phillies had a nine-run cushion at that point as he returned from a rehab assignment. Duran sprinkled in some outs, finishing off the game for Sanchez. Eventually did load the bases with two outs and walked in a run. Between him and Painter, the Phillies really have some key guys who haven't worked what is essentially the worst thing a pitcher can do out of their systems yet this year. But Duran managed to get out of it with eight runs still between him and a blown save. So the Phillies pulled off the win in game one, 9-1. Kind of the same question here, Liz. Duran's a really big, really important part of this team. The collective ERA, collective performance of the bullpen seems to, you can see statistically it fluctuates based on whether he's out there and whether he's contributing or not. And obviously that's how it's meant to be. You know, we're going to kind of hit on the bullpen a little bit here, but I think everybody knows and anybody in that bullpen would tell you, like, you know, Duran may not be the sheriff, as that role apparently has fallen to someone else that we're going to talk about, but Duran is clearly the star. He is the stud. He is the treasure of that bullpen, and he's going to make you better. He's here for a reason. He's here to do this job. coming back from an injury, you know, we've seen how this bullpen kind of had to cobble together some close wins without their closer. But then having him come back and getting some trouble here, you know, yes, the lead made things a lot easier to digest. And it wasn't nearly enough trouble to make anybody super nervous. But you did start seeing tweets of like, you know, let's not do this, or can we not, as you typically do when the Phillies look like they're about to give up a bunch of runs.
They're about to give up like a 12-run lead. There is no one who wasn't watching that thinking, okay, you've got to calm down because this we know where we are. This could get out of hand very quickly, as things tend to do in Philadelphia. Like, no one would have put it past the Phillies to give that up.
So are you under the mind that we're going to watch Duran sort of work his way back into his repertoire here, or this was just, you know, he was going real hard because he was back and felt like he had a job to do? Like, do you feel like this is a shorter term, or a longer term issue, or do you think this is kind of isolated and just reflective of him returning from an injury stint?
I think it's probably, I hate being like, it's a mix between short and long, which is medium. But I think it could be a little of both. He is coming back from an injury. He does want to do his job and look like he could get it done right away. He might have gone a little too hard too fast. I don't think it's going to take him a lot of time to get back to where he was, but I think he does sort of have to take it easy a little bit. Like, the Phillies have been able to get it done without him. And even though it's been difficult and not always successful, they've managed to do it. And so I know he feels a lot of responsibility, as a lot of closers do, for the way games go in their absence. But, like, take a seat. Step back. Let yourself get into it before you're like, I have the whole world on my shoulders at this 12-0 or 12-1 lead. Like, it was such a great opportunity to put him in and just be like, yeah, get back into it. You've got a huge lead. Don't worry. And then I think he did the opposite of that. He convinced himself this was a big deal, and he put himself like right through it. I'm like, man, you don't have to.
You know,
it's a very sort of old school Phillies thing. Like, I feel like Bryce Harper a lot has had that sort of attitude. Like, I'm back now. I have to get into it because the team needs me. Like, they do. The team does need you, but, you know, don't overexert yourself so early, especially mentally. If you're just going to have that mindset, you're going to wear yourself down so quickly.
And you're right. The Phillies have found a couple of good performances without Duran around. Not all good performances, I would say. Jonathan Bolin continues to struggle. You know, Tim Mays has kind of been up and down a bit. But you do have Chase Shugart, who came up from AAA and has been solid. And Orion Kerkering, I'm going to give you some numbers in a little bit here. Orion Kerkering has been excellent for the Phillies out of the bullpen, which is just fantastic to see. But as far as, and I think Alvarado is still making people nervous, but as far as Duran's performance, Caleb Kottem told reporters, this is courtesy of Phillies Nation, that the big thing is that he came out of it healthy. His stuff looked great. They honestly took some good at-bats. They didn't swing at some pitches that were kind of close. And obviously that was not, from an execution standpoint, what he normally is, but it was his first one back. So the Phillies seem ready to just chalk that up to, you know, this is a guy transitioning back from the injured list. He's, you know, his job is to enter the game in the most dramatic situations. Yes, a 9-0 lead is not a very dramatic situation, but again, that's part of the easement process for Duran. And yeah, as Kottem was saying here, I think the general outlook here is that stuff looked great, had a couple of, you know, near misses and hard hit balls and command, whatever. You know, it's just the nature of a pitcher getting back into his groove. And we shall see if that continues. But I'm confident. I'm with the Phillies on this one. I feel like, you know, you're gonna see it. You're gonna have to see a lot more bad Joan Duran performances to think something's really off. I think it's great news that he's back, and I think the bullpen is kind of taking its form here. I think roles are being sussed out, and everybody's getting comfortable with each other. But before we get to that, I do want to mention, you know, Bryson Stott. Bryson Stott is on fire. Bryce Harper also crushing it. But it was the two of them were kind of talking about how perhaps this excellent play should result in a greater amount of playing time for people who perhaps have been platooned because they can't hit certain types of pitchers. Bryson Stott is one of those players. It has become prerogative of whoever is managing the Phillies in 2026 to perhaps slot Edmundo Sosa in there at times when they feel it's a better match. But Harper says out loud, according to Phillies.com, about Stott, he's an everyday player. When you have a guy that needs to play every day, lefty, righty, it don't matter. He's going to keep having good at-bats. He's an everyday guy. He always has been. When you take an everyday guy out of the lineup, it's tough for them to get it going each day. And Stott said the same thing. He said, it's just kind of been a career thing for me. The more I can play, the more of a rhythm I can get in. So, I mean, Liz, do you agree here? We're seeing, I think the Bryson Stott success has been going on long enough to say this is pretty encouraging. The kind of numbers he's putting up and the kind of hits he's coming through with, the amount of homers he's been hitting, just a little uptick in those recently. Do you feel like this should result in an everyday role for Bryson Stott? The Phillies are a $300 million team. It's maybe not the best look to have ill-defined platoons all over the place and an outfield that can kind of look sometimes like an infield.
Yeah, I think it's definitely time for him to get more playing time. I mean, that's what he was drafted for. That's what he's done his whole career. And I think when he's struggling, platooning him is not a terrible idea, because when he struggles, it is bad. But he's picked himself back up and started to move in the right direction. So it's time to give him his playing time back, because I would certainly rather see him than Edmundo Sosa. As much as I love Edmundo, don't get me wrong, but he's not an everyday player, and we know that. Bryson Stott is an everyday player, so it's time to give him his playing time back, give him his position back, and let him go. When he struggles again, I don't think it's a bad idea to limit some of his playing time, you know, because it seems to have worked this time, at least finally. So maybe it's not a bad idea in the future, but you know, right now he's doing great. And so give him a chance to stop being great, at least, you know?
I'm with you. I think Edmundo Sosa gives you collectively like 2 months of exciting clutch play. But, you know, the word overexposed gets brought up about him for a reason. It's like you said, because that's the role he has. That being said, the way Edmundo Sosa comes through for this team, good luck telling people to see less of him, you know?
He's a magic guy for the Phillies. Like, there's a reason Dave Dombrowski won't get rid of him. He's like, he knows there's something about him. It's like there's something underneath the Phillies stadium that reacts with his blood that just makes it happen.
Well, Game 2 on Thursday saw the Phillies come back with the A's up 2-0 in the 5th and 3-1 in the 6th after a Felix Reyes RBI groundout. Lineup was looking dangerously close to having depleted itself with those 9 runs the day before, but Adolis Garcia pulled them back within one with a solo shot. Garcia isn't thriving, Liz, and he isn't even playing at the ceiling low expectations would have projected him for yet, but I will say, with a .246 batting average, a couple of homers, and that arm in right field that has already gunned down a runner and made a lot more plays at home close in this A's series alone, it's not as big a compliment as it probably sounds. But he's already proven far more useful and effective than Max Kepler, Austin Hayes, and Whit Merrifield combined. Is that fair?
That is completely fair. You think his batting average alone. His batting average alone, and he's been playing all the time, almost pretty much every day. Like, you look at other guys, any of those guys, and they not only did they not play every day, when they did play, they were garbage trash. So, he's already been worth it, I think. Having someone out there that you can trust in the outfield. There isn't, as much as I loved this from Nick Castellanos, there is no voice telling him when he knows he should, when he should let it go to catch it.
Wonder what that voice is telling him now. Is it telling him to hit 170? Probably not. Oh, well. I will say that Garcia... I will say that calling Garcia... calling Garcia worth it is maybe a tough gambit, because $10 million is $10 million. And even with me trying to put a positive spin on this, I'm not going to say these are $10 million numbers that he's putting up yet.
No.
I'm just saying, as far as like being one of the guys on the carousel that has filled this role, or that they've gotten to try and fill this role, this has been better than the very low bar the previous occupants of this role have been able to contribute. So in a way, this is already a win of sorts. My hope is he continues to play better and perhaps better. And I'm not saying, like, you know, the ceiling is limitless here, but I do think it's a bit higher than it is now. And I think I can reward what success he has had with those expectations. So it would be really great to see Garcia become a legit power threat for this team. That would answer a question that they've needed to have answered for a while. But even so, it sure was fun watching people realize as they try to score on the Phillies that play is going to be a lot closer this year if it's Adolis Garcia whipping the ball in. Because again, there were two throws. Then the runner was safe and it wasn't like challengeable. But there were two throws he made against the A's where you could tell that they had to like find another gear, put a little more zip in their step, or just realized after the play, like, oh, yep, okay, that was maybe last year that play. Well, definitely last year that play is not as close as it was this year. So it's good to see close plays mean that you have a better chance of making things interesting. So I just wanted to make sure,
just for show. Those are real, baby.
Well, like we were mentioning before, this game came down to, of course, an Edmundo Sosa at bat in the eighth inning.
Of course.
So this is what I'm talking about, Liz. What I'm talking about, good luck telling people that they should see less of this guy. The bases were loaded after Kyle Schwarber had walked. Bryce Harper had hit into a fielder's choice that Jeff McNeil had chosen to throw past second base, leading to everyone being safe. And then Adolis Garcia singled to center, which would have scored some Phillies base runners, but not Kyle Schwarber on that one, understandably. But no matter, because that's when Edmundo Sosa came to the plate. Liz, when I tell you that Edmundo Sosa was ready to hit here, I think if they'd zoomed in, you probably could have actually seen his mouth watering in the batter's box. This man worked a, I believe, 7-pitch at bat.
Oh, yeah.
He swung at every pitch. So I don't even know if working it is the correct way to phrase that. He was there to do what he decided to do, and he's good enough to be able to do it. There was a breaking, the first pitch he saw just went like a foot outside the zone, and he just kind of waved at it to start things off. Like, not even close. Just, he swung through the zone.
Like, well, this isn't going to end well.
Like,
he's got the first pitch of the at bat. What do you think? It's like, well, this guy definitely knows where the ball is going before. You know, he definitely knows when to swing. Nope.
They didn't give him his wooden spoon to bite down on in the on-deck circle, and now he's just super overstimulated when he gets in the box. And you see that happen. You see his bat wave through the strike zone. The ball is not even close to it, and you're just like, don't like where this is going. Next pitch which thankfully was in the zone, but he did just whiff on that one as well. So he goes down 0-2 immediately, like very quickly. Then he fouled off 4 pitches in a row, I want to say, somehow making gross contact with stuff that was high and inside. And you're like, this man is full to bursting with the desire to hit. He's just missing solid contact because everything just looks hittable to him. Well, there it was. On the 7th pitch, Edmundo Sosa cracked a single up the middle to score 2 runs, give the Phillies the big hit they needed, give the Phillies the lead they needed. They never looked back after that. Brandon Marsh and Bryson Stott followed with a couple of base hits. JT Realmuto had a hard liner, but wound up in a glove. Justin Crawford did the equivalent of a bunt, softly grounding out but getting another run in to score to make it 6-3. Zach Wheeler had another encouraging start in this one, going 6 1/3 innings before giving way to a bullpen that combined to allow 2 hits, 3 walks, and no runs the rest of the way. I'll just pause there for a second before I get into the bullpen. Liz, did the offense tell you anything that they kind of weren't telling you in game one of this series? They, you know, they came out and were able to stomp the A's, run up a big score, insulate themselves from any bullpen issues. Game two, they had to come back, and they did so pretty effectively. It wasn't like they suddenly just went off and hit back-to-back-to-back home runs or anything, but you just had a couple of big at-bats, and a couple of guys came through in those big at-bats. You're still seeing numbers like 4-13 with runners in scoring position, but when you're scoring enough, people stop looking at those numbers.
Yeah. I don't think that the first game told me anything I didn't know in the second game, because we've seen the Phillies do this maybe in previous years. I'm trying to remember if they've done some of this before now, because the last month of baseball was just so disgusting. It's hard to remember much. I don't want to remember anything from there. Do you?
No.
That, no. They should, like, in the video yearbook at the end of the year, they should really just skip that. Just skip the first month and be like, the season started on, you know, April 28th or whatever.
I had that.
The offense, sorry.
Well, I had that, to your point, I had that theory a couple years ago that the season should start when it starts, but then absolutely no results and absolutely no are published and absolutely no fans are allowed into the stadium,
yes,
so that the outcomes of the games have absolutely no one knows. And then at Memorial Day, they just kind of pull the sheet off the season and they're like, all right, this is where everybody is. And you can't say it's early because it's Memorial Day and now every game matters and this is the situation. Imagine how horrified some people would be. What a day in sports that would be. It'd be like, you know, the draft, but way worse.
I feel like the draft and, gosh, I think I was going to also say the draft. I was trying to remember if there's another.
The combine.
Like the Super Bowl, the combine. Like, it would, like, the bracket Pro announcement.
Ball.
That's what I was
oh,
saying.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Bracket announcement. Like, the lead up to the Masters. All that.
That'll calm people down, for sure. Yeah, so do you feel like, okay, so we saw another good Zach Wheeler performance here as well. He went into the seventh inning. I mean, it's I think we're all bracing ourselves for the Zach Wheeler return to be underwhelming or just kind of a soft landing for him to sort of get his legs back under him. And while we aren't seeing, like, you know, eight innings of dominance from Zach Wheeler, which I think it's totally fair. You don't need to see that at first here, and you're just hoping that that he can continue making the progress that he's been making. Do you feel like this Zach Wheeler's return has kind of been seamlessly absorbed into the flow of the season? That, like, we were waiting for this, we were hoping it would be big, and it feels like it's kind of just been a seamless return for him. That he's been able to re-enter his role and pitch very well, and hopefully pitch even better as the weeks go by.
Yeah, like, there hasn't been, like, a big, woo, he's back. And, like, and you're right, he's not turning in, like, those incredible performances, but he doesn't need to. You know, I think he, in his last start, I think he did allow, like, a handful of runs. And when he came off the field, everyone applauded him. Like, people were standing up and applauding and cheering. And I'm like, that is lovely. You know, they understand how, everyone understands how terrible the illness and the surgery was for him last year. And they're so encouraged to see that he's mostly, you know, back to being who he was, not exactly, but being a functional, productive pitcher, you know, who is in control of his stuff and who knows what's happening on the mound. And that's, I think, the most encouraging thing to a lot of people, that he's not bad. He's not trying to catch up. He's fine. You know, his performance last year was incredible. But I would trade that for this, if he manages to stay healthy for the rest of the season. You know, if he could stay healthy for last season, I would have rathered a standard good Zach Wheeler season, because the injury was so difficult, you know.
Jesus Luzardo, Christopher Sanchez, and a not functioning, but a good Zach Wheeler is a great start. I hesitate to say, like, that's enough. And you don't say Nola's name because he is not reliable. And we're going to talk about the other guy in this rotation here because he had a start in this series as well. But for the most part, that's the idea that, again, you come back to the rotation and how that is a strength of this team and that's how it's built. And how the rotation goes is typically how the success for the team goes, because rare are the nights when the offense is going to lead the charge, where the offense is going to score enough to cover for a reliable starter's faltering. I think it's way more likely that you're gonna be relying on the Sanchez's and the Lizardos and the Wheelers to keep a team at bay so that the offense can score enough runs to beat them. I think that's more how this team is built. So once again, coming back to the performances of guys like Sanchez and Luzardo, you can build a cushion for these other guys to work through whatever, you know, coming back from an injury, coming back from an absence, working out command issues, whatever they're typically going through. If two of these guys at any given time are pitching well, maybe you can hide that the rest of them are trying to put something together, but that's a lot. That's a lot of coverage. That's more coverage than you want. So a high-functioning Zach Wheeler is very important to this team, because I think the difference between having three high-end pitchers versus two, it's a big difference. It is. So
it is. And I think he'll keep improving. It's only been a handful of starts since he's been back. The weather still hasn't been overly warm. I think everyone says this, but when the summer gets going, pitchers tend to do better in general because it's warm out and they don't have to warm up quite as much.
Very true, but don't tell that to the pitchers who are already excelling, like Orion Kerkering, whose ERA is down to 2.08. Liz, Orion Kerkering hasn't allowed a run in his last 9 appearances, which total 7 2/3 innings. Since giving up a run to the Braves on April 17th, Kerkering has given up only 3 hits and 4 walks, and no runs, and he hasn't walked anybody in his last 6 appearances. I mean, I don't really have another point to make here other than you're looking for great bullpen arms, and I think, you know, things hiccuped a bit and Kerkering had some health issues during the spring and you didn't really see too much of him, and obviously we all know the story coming into the season and what he's got to overcome. Well, he's overcoming it. According to these numbers, he is overcoming it, and boy, right about now is when you want to start being able to think about who you can rely on in the bullpen. And, you know, it'll be an up and down season. Guys will be hot. Guys will cool off. It's how it rolls. But you're starting to figure out who the bigger arms are going to be in this bullpen. And, you know, you got Duran. You know, you brought in Keller, but he's been touch and go. I believe his ERA is 4.02, 5.02. It's not somewhere you want to see it. So, you know, seeing a guy like Kerkering come through, especially given his narrative, is really encouraging.
Yeah, you couldn't see earlier, but I was fanning myself when you were reading those numbers. Those are great. That's not a sign of a guy who needs to get over anything, you know?
Nope.
I think when he said, you know, I understand how tough it might be. At least I can empathize with how tough it might be to get over something that you did that had so many ripple effects, at least seemingly. And he's just handling all of it really well. You know, he could have, there are a lot of ways that this could have gone, but he seems to have just locked right in and been like, last year was last year. That was a different guy. This is me now. You know, I've moved on and I've gotten a better handle on my stuff because of it.
Speaking of bullpen arms, Tim Mayza's not hurting things out there either, having apparently inherited the bullpen leader role from Matt Strom, according to Lachlan March in the Inquirer. And Jeff Kerr over at The Good Fight says they call him the sheriff because they were getting a little too into a game they were playing in, like, the bullpen or something during a game, and Mayza, like, broke it up. According to the story...
What? Thanks, Dad.
According to the sheriff... Yes. According to the story, Chase Shugart, a newcomer after being traded from the Pirates over the offseason, described the bullpen as really close. He already had previous connections as Shugart coincided with Mayza early last season in Pittsburgh, but also played with Brad Keller in 2024 on the Red Sox. Liz, do you feel like a strong bullpen is a close bullpen, or do you think guys are better off just, you know, siloed off from each other, not speaking, or speaking only in grunts or head movements, and generally just taking care of their own business while not even learning the last names of their colleagues?
Well, I remember when Matt Strom and Hoffman, thank you. Jeff Hoffman were, you know, like the best of friends. And they both did fantastically that season. I think a close bullpen helps everybody, especially since, you know, some guys might know what other guys are struggling with. They could, you know, tell the bullpen coach. They could tell the guy. Working together always makes it, I think, better, at least in a bullpen. For some reason, like, it's sort of like starting pitchers. Some starting pitchers are real weirdos. You have to keep them siloed off sometimes. The offensive guys are weird, and the bullpen guys are all different. And it's great when you get a group of weirdos, like bullpen guys, together, and they're all really close. You know, bullpens are not put together for personality. You know, teams aren't always, mostly, they're not put together for personality. But when you can get a group of guys together that, you know, are seemingly a lot different from each other. You know, I don't see, like, a lot of obvious commonality between some of these guys. But that they all get along and they're all really close is nothing but a benefit to them and the atmosphere the Phillies are giving them. And the freedom that they give them to sort of be close and create their own atmosphere. I think that's a really special thing.
Remember when Hoffman got here and Matt Strom was like, they kept trading my warm-up partners. So Hoffman got there and Strom was like, we are buddies. You are my warm-up buddy. And Hoffman was like, what is going on? He was like, we are friends now. And, like, they were just friends after that.
Which I miss Matt Strom. I think he's a great guy, and I think on a different team would have stayed around and been a lot of fun. This was not the team for him, but he was definitely the player for me. I love him and I miss him.
That was exactly how I would imagine a Matt Strom friendship to begin. Yes.
I hope so.
And then we come to game three of this A's series just played yesterday. Phillies lost 12-1. They were never in it. This was never really a ball game. Andrew Painter got hammered early, giving up 3 home runs on 2 strike fastballs. Garrett Stubbs pitched an inning of this game. Kind of surprising Painter even got into the fourth after the way things started. Painter's fastball has not been working. We are in the phase of his struggles in which people will point out the early struggles of other pitchers who went on to great success, like Cole Hamels, as I believe they did in the Inquirer. Or maybe that was Todd Zielecki, actually. After the game, Painter told reporters via Phillies.com in regards to the A's hammering his inside fastball, which at over 96 miles an hour is faster than the average major league heater, but still not getting swings and misses. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I was just going to say, what?
Yeah. So they're hitting it, basically. So, you know, that's a problem. I think then Painter had this to say after the game, and that's kind of what I want to talk about here. I think that was part of the setup, Painter said. I think the approach there was everything hard was in and everything soft was away. So I would imagine an approach there was if they saw it in, they thought it was a fastball. If they saw it away, they figured it was spinning or they were taking it. Specifically, the last 2 starts. I think the shape has been a little better, Painter said of some of his pitches. I made a couple tweaks. It's definitely been flying better. The results haven't been there, but like I said, it's probably the process and the setup. I think probably moving in and out a little more. I think throwing the 4-seam outside will help that. Now, it doesn't even really matter if you like didn't even understand what he was talking about there. It's more so the fact that he gave like a 6-sentence answer to like what was going on out there when they asked him. And you also get plenty of reports that from his teammates that he's never bothered by this stuff. He keeps a pretty level, if not positive, approach, regardless of what happens on the field. And I feel like the way to approach a young starter's first 10-20 starts, especially one of such like great importance as Andrew Painter, the expectations are high for a reason. And the first couple of starts, you know, first couple dozen starts of his career, I think this is going to be tough for all of us to do, but I do think it would in the end be healthier to think of it less like he's pitching a ball game and more like he's going into a lab. Like he's got to find out what works at this level, what teams might have on him and what they don't. Unless he's facing the Rockies, this is the best opposition he's ever faced in his career by far. So it's sort of like sometimes he's going to come out of that lab and, you know, he'll be like on fire or like there'll be a huge mess, but he will have learned something, which is kind of how I'm looking at this 12-1 loss to a team like the A's that doesn't score 12 runs for no reason. Like you couldn't wind them up and watch them score 12 runs without the pitcher giving them something, you know, something going wrong on his end as well. So what I'm hearing in these comments is a young pitcher who knows what he's talking about. And he's like, this is what we were doing. This is why I think it didn't work. So presumably this is why adjustments are going to be made in the future. And additionally, the main thing the main takeaway you see from this in all the write-ups about this game three hammering that Painter took was that Don Mattingly really liked that he told Andrew Painter he could take him out if he was ready to come out. And Painter was like, nope, I want to keep pitching. Like, even though this is going terribly, like I got to get back in the lab. I got to keep working. And that's what they let him do. They let him go back out there. He finished game three, 3 3/2 innings, allowed 7 hits, 8 runs, all of them earned, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts, and all 3 of those home runs. Andrew Painter's ERA now sits at 6.89. So I wouldn't call this good, and Andrew Painter wouldn't call it good. But again, this still feels like we're very much in the fledgling period of Andrew Painter's career as a major league starter. And based on how the Phillies are handling him, based on how he's handling his game, it really feels like everyone's understanding and on the right page here. I'm sure there are plenty of people who are like, the guy stinks. We got to move on. And like, you know, that's to be expected as well. It's frustrating to watch a highly touted young starter give up a bunch of home runs and have his fastball not work. It just feels like such a fundamental issue to have. Regardless, I think you're just seeing a young pitcher learn how to be a big league pitcher. And at the end of the day, a 12-1 loss is never going to be encouraging. But when you sift through the fallout and look at what went down and look how people responded to it, in the end, this is just part of the process of this young pitcher learning to pitch in the big leagues. So I don't know. Where did you land after this particular butt kicking by the A's?
You know, not every pitcher is going to, or not every player, not every prospect is going to be ready to hit them, is going to be ready at the same level when they come up to the majors. Some guys are ready to hit immediately. Some guys are ready to pitch immediately. Some guys have a little bit more figuring out to do. You know, they may be done at the AAA level, and the only way to make them better is for them to face major league hitting, major league pitching. And I think that's the case for Andrew Painter. He had a hiccup in his journey, but he definitely has been overall really confident and sure about his talent. And I think that's something that we're seeing here. He knows what he's talking about, and the reason why he doesn't get bothered is because he trusts himself to figure out what's going on, but he also trusts, you know, his own level of expertise, his own talent, his own stuff to get him out of it. He's not a guy that doesn't believe he doesn't belong there. He knows he belongs. He just has to find the right combination, the right way to do it, you know? He understands that, you know, he's got all these pitches to work with, but he still needs a fastball. He still really needs a fastball. And that's what he's focusing on. It's great to see him say, I've got a plan. I'm not bothered. This is part of the process. It's all a process. Some guys are ready. Some guys, you know, need more work. But staying at AAA may not necessarily help them. And that's Painter to me. Staying in AAA wouldn't have helped him very much. He needs to come up here and face the big guys in order to figure out how he's going to pitch to all of them. It's almost worse when you have, you know, mastery over so many pitches, because it gives you so many more choices and so many more ways to get it wrong.
I'll also add that, you know, I'm not smarter than anybody, but if you're throwing all your hard stuff inside and you're throwing all your soft stuff outside, yeah, that's a pattern that a major league hitter, probably any major league hitter, is going to pick up on and be able to hit the ball. So, yes, I would say that's something to consider in the future as well. Hey, Liz, did the Phillies lose this game 12-1 because they gave Alec Bohm the day off?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Edmundo Sosa. For a second, Phillies fans crossed their fingers hoping Alec Bohm had been replaced at third base, but that's probably not happening permanently anytime very soon. Edmundo Sosa, Felix Reyes, and Garrett Stubbs all shared third base in that one. Liz, why does it feel like this $300 million team just doesn't have enough players sometimes? Seems a little short-sighted.
It does seem that way. Is it because it's not that the Phillies don't have enough players? Are some of them not good at the same time that they need to be? Is that it?
I guess, but sometimes it just feels like they go to point to the bench to send somebody in. They're just like, oh, we don't have a guy for that. Well, how did this happen?
There's like a lizard there for some reason.
The Phillies' one run, as you were probably wondering this whole time, their one run in that 12-1 loss came courtesy of a Schwarbaum, his 12th of the season. Let's touch on the minors real quick. I'm hoping to have Mitch Rupert on the show again real soon to talk about the some stories coming out of the Phillies minor league system so far this year. But for now, we'll settle for these crumbs here at the end of this episode. Aiden Miller update, Liz. Still no baseball activities per Jeff Kerr via John Mattingly. Not even swinging a bat.
Great.
How ominous is the music in your head after updates like that, Liz? People are starting to hear it.
It's real ominous, and it's getting louder. It's frustrating. And if they're waiting to see, as someone who had chronic back problems for a long time and still does, you know, in spurts, it's really tough to deal with. But, you know, if you're a baseball player and you're sitting there waiting, it's really hard. And I have to wonder if they're waiting for something to happen. Are they waiting for it to just get better magically? Are we waiting to see if someone needs surgery? Like, I feel like, I don't know. As you've said, I'm not smarter than anybody else, and so I have no idea. But I would love to know if there's, I don't know, more that could be done, if we're just still waiting for his back to feel better. You know? the waiting is the hardest part. But, you know, is there anything we could do to make it shorter? Like, because this is getting real concerning.
Like, they try to heat pad?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. There are, like, high-grade lidocaine patches out there. I've got some. Does he need some?
Well, just hoping that, I mean, you know, the Phillies understand the role that he might even play this year, and it still remains to be seen what role he is going to play this year. But for now, just hope that lower back starts feeling better, because everybody's very eager to see Aiden Miller back on a baseball diamond. Speaking of Mitch Rupert, he does report that in the second game of his rehab stint in Clearwater, Gabriel Rincones Jr., the man only I call the Archangel, but everyone should call him that. It's like Brandon Marsh, Swamp Thing. Two excellent nicknames I've given you, Philadelphia, and there's just no traction whatsoever. Regardless, Gabriel Rincones Jr. unloads on a cutter to the tune of 496 feet.
That's not a real number. That's not how far baseballs go.
So if you thought I was making a big stinking deal out of the time he hit one out of First Energy Park and over the highway in Reading, I'm going to be even more obnoxious about this. So Mitch, if you're listening, get ready for questions that aren't really questions and just exclamations about a 496-foot home run. Phillies prospect Illyrio Farabas, a catcher. Gasp.
Names are great.
He's hitting .351 with an OPS over 1,000. Unfortunately, he took a 97-mile-an-hour fastball off the left wrist. It was originally ruled a foul ball before being changed to a hit-by-pitch, Rupert reports. He was then removed from the game. That was like catching a mirage on the horizon. It was like a young catcher hitting very well in the Phillies farm system. And he's gone.
He fell down a hole.
Here's hoping he recovers quickly as well. And hey, look at that. You can have a beer delivered to you via Zipline at a Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs game this year. So it's past time to get up there, I think. I'm ready to catch you.
I have so many bad thoughts about how this. I just see beer sloshing everywhere on top of patrons, on top of players. Like, I'm sure it's a lot different than that, but I'm just imagining, like, a bucket of beer, rickety, just waddling down the line, sort of. Almost
now, obviously,
hitting the players in the head.
Obviously, the video makes it seem like you are standing in a designated spot, and then it comes down, and they pick it up, and then they hand it to you. In my head, it's wherever I'm sitting in the stadium, I'm going to be able to order a beer out of the air that I then catch out of the air without having to get out of my seat. And if it's anything other than that experience that I've created completely out of nothing in my head, then yeah, I'll be massively disappointed, of course. So...
Seems like you're saying don't go.
I'm saying dream big, Liz. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
A series win against the A's. The offense hit most of the time, and some of the finest starting pitching and bullpen work of the season so far for the Phils. Despite that disappointing loss in Game 3, they did take 2-3 from the A's. The Phillies have won 9 of 12. And will stay home to face the visiting Rockies over Mother's Day weekend with a chance to rack up a few more wins here in front of your mom. On Friday at 6:40, it'll be Chase Dullinger versus Jesus Luzardo. It's Aaron Nola in the Saturday game at 6:05 facing Kyle Freeland. And in the Sunday matinee, you get Christopher Sanchez taking on Tomoyuki Sugano. So as far as, you know, flattening a team like the Rockies and trying as hard as you can to truly rack up the three wins that you should be able to get from this series, Luzardo and Sanchez out there at least give you a really good shot at winning 2 out of 3 again and keeping this momentum, Liz. So I'm thinking this weekend goes pretty well for the Phils. How about you?
I hope so. You've said it before. There's no reason for them to lose to this team.
Yes.
There's just none. Do they have, like, pretty much the same record? Yes. But there's no reason for them to lose to this team.
The mountain to climb is going to be Saturday, where the Phillies will face a lefty starter for the only time in this series, and Aaron Nola will be pitching for them. So never know what you're going to see there. That'll be the tricky one.
Wild ride.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to my co-host, Liz Rocher. You can get new episodes of Hittin' Season 3 times a week at billypenn.com/hittinseason, as well as anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find bonus Phillies podcasts at the Hittin' Season Patreon at patreon.com/hittinseason. We will have a new episode of The Dirty Inning, our Phillies history podcast, in the coming week about the 1999 loss streak that you heard so much about when the Phillies almost matched it just couple of weeks ago. So we got to retrace our steps through a truly disappointing 1999 season. The Phillies really went out of the millennium real low. Like, it wasn't like they were the worst team of all time. They might have wound up being the most disappointing single season performance. Probably of at least the decade. Like, that was a bummer. But that'll be a lot of fun as we retrace our steps through that particular losing streak from Phillies history. I'm Justin Clue, and from WHYY, that's the ballgame. We'll talk to you next time on Hidden Season.